Some of the most beautiful artistry comes out of the darkness. Poetry, paintings, and music, often thought to be revolutionary, begins as nothing more than a glowing ember, a spark from within to light up the shadows. My name is Catherine Skye Knott. I'm a holistic journalist, columnist, and broadcaster. I'm also the host of Nature Therapy and Beyond. Each week we traverse the natural world, traveling around the globe to speak with experts and practitioners about holistic health and lifestyles. We've just landed in the wilds of northern New South Wales, Australia, taking a walk on what I feel is a very special path. We're in the generous and grounding presence of Odette Nightskye, author, counselor, and contemporary shaman. Australia is well known for its natural wonders, wide open spaces and deserts, home to some of the most extensive artesian systems in the world. Its mineral-rich hot springs have been known to increase metabolism, purify the skin, and provide relief from physical aches and mental stress. With a multicultural population, practicing almost every religion and lifestyle, it's a land of varied global arts and intellectual pursuits. As we speak, another colorful Australian afternoon is drifting into evening. The sky is dotted with the most unusual patchwork of clouds. Inside the house, Odette has lit a cozy fire. The winds are shifting, so let's go inside. I'm interested in finding out what you think of her story. I should probably ask you, do you call yourself a shaman?
I call myself a contemporary shaman because I feel there's a great difference.
A traditional shamanism, to me, it seems borderline violent, the training that goes into it.
I think the greatest difference is traditional shamans are usually, you know, they're indigenous to the land. They do go through a lot of pretty heavy trials in being a shaman, but it's also madness is one of them. In contemporary shamanism, from my experience, I walk through the path of madness as well. I think the greatest difference between traditional and contemporary is traditionals are not so much there anymore. There are only a few left in the world, whereas we all can become contemporary shamans in a way, which is using the tools that were offered in our own modern lives. There's a great quote from Kevin Turner, who wrote Sky Shamans of Mongolia, and I think he says it quite well. Shamanism is not a religion. We don't have holy books. It's a methodology for practical spirituality. We're individuals, not religious followers. So each person has their own path in shamanism, but there are tools and guidelines that one has to adhere to, because shamanism is the way in which we traverse the multidimensional landscapes of non-ordinary reality. So if you're not skilled, if you don't have the tools to know how to do that properly, you can get very lost, very muddled, and it can be detrimental to your well-being. So it needs to be done with wisdom and careful safety, because a lot of people play around with it and they can be very dangerous.
I think that's a good point. There's so much in the energy around us, and we all have varying degrees of sensitivity. I know sometimes we pick up on things. Depending on whether or not you wanted to pursue certain lines of energy, you could very much find yourself in a situation that would be, as you say, detrimental. You would need some sort of guide to help navigate.
Exactly, and that's what it's about. As a contemporary shaman, I am kind of like a travel guide, a midwife, a facilitator for people's own healing. So just like you would normally go to a foreign country and you'd open up the Lonely Planet travel guide, it gives you warnings what to do, what places not to go to. If you're in a country that has certain customs, how to respect those customs. The multidimensional landscape of shamanism is quite the same. You need a good guide so you don't get lost on your trail. You know how to respect the landscape and the beings that you encounter.
You must have had such a teacher when you were doing training. Do you ever complete your training?
I don't think if we're still in body, we'd never complete our training. But my teacher was very profound, and she was a very strong being, and she taught me the basics. But I met her after I walked through the door of madness and didn't know where I was going. I felt very lost and very unstable. I couldn't find anything that fit what was happening to me. Then I researched quite obsessively and different areas. When I hit shamanism, it just made sense to me. It fit like a glove. Fortunately, Spirit put me in her way. She was a formidable teacher. There's blessings and not so many blessings when you've got a formidable teacher. But she taught me so well. She handed down all her teachings to me, and I'm very grateful for her. She showed me a way I could manage my altered state of consciousness.
I'd like to go back to what you had said before about state of madness that puts you on the shaman path. What do you mean by that?
Even with the traditional shamans, one of the initiations is basically you walk through the doors of madness, which is you walk into the multidimensional realm. It's a bit like being in a nightmare and having no control in the dream. It's very common in shamanism to do that. The difference between the shaman or the contemporary shaman and the madman or the person who has chronic psychosis is that the shaman heals from the madness, whereas others don't. And so you find your way out of the other side of madness. And that's what I was able to do. You know, I have history of it in my family. So, of course, I thought, woohoo, here we go. I'm going that way too. I've always been a bit of a spirit kid and someone that wants to look outside the box of things. For me, it grounded me. Shamanism, it really connected me to a reason to be here on the planet because I wasn't sure what I was doing here. I didn't feel in my body. I didn't feel connected to planet Earth at all. It really brought me into connection with nature and the greater multidimensional landscape of life. So my life is not just what we see as ordinary reality. My life is a combination of ordinary reality and non-ordinary reality. They sort of weave and blend, so I feel like I live more of a whole life. And in that whole life, I can be of better service to humanity and the people that I meet that need guidance.
There's generally in our lives a catalyst or a transitional point that lifts us up and turns us onto the right path. In this case, I suppose the madness you're referring to was a guidepost of its own.
It was a massive guidepost because in the state of madness, if anybody's been in psychosis, it's a sense of having no control at all. And to let go of control seems absolutely terrifying. And it is absolutely terrifying. For me, it was during my Saturn return, which in astrology, it usually happens around 28, 29 years old. And if you haven't been looking at things, they come bopping you in the face, whether you like it or not. So I was sort of confronted by my soul, in a way, to look at myself and to look at how I'd been living my life. And I'd been an actress. Basically, it shattered that, but it put me on a path of service that was so much more enriching and so much more fulfilling. The madness was horrible at the time, but it was a massive doorway to the pathway that I was meant to be of service to.
It's interesting, when you're an actress, you're playing a role, then to be reoriented into being your authentic self, to play the role of who you are in this human existence. Interesting symbolism.
Yes, and I think that I was very good at playing other people, but to be myself was difficult because I didn't really get my soul story. I was still in my ego of how to fit into the world, how to fit into society, and I didn't quite know how to do that other than being an actress. The slap in the face was a big reality check. As my mother would say to me, "You're a deep diver." She said, "I like to swim on the surface. You dive really deep." You know, and I think, yep, I've always been a really deep diver. And there was one point in my walking into madness, I said to a male friend, "I don't think I can do this. I'm not going to survive it. I'm drowning." And he said, "It's okay. You'll find you can breathe if you just let yourself go and drown." For the first moment he said that, I thought, "Oh, no, I can't." But then, I don't know, I kind of got it. And I let go into the drowning and everything woke up inside me and I could see better, I could sense better. And I started to work with what I was encountering rather than running away from it. And it made the difference to my life in a huge way.
Wow. There's an exercise in Qigong called the swimming dragon, and just when you tell your story, it sort of reminds me of that, because the deeper you dive with the movements of the swimming dragon, the more kinks you get out and the more energy you allow into your spine.
Exactly.
So, contemporary shamanism, what do you offer?
I can do one-on-one training. That can mean anything. from the practice of soul retrieval, which is quite amazing how you can do it on Skype, but you can. I work with past lives. I work a lot with grief, with people who have quite a lot of wounding and don't know how to recover. I also guide people in shamanic practices, safe practices, because that's my credo, basically. I read and experienced a lot of shamanic work that I didn't think was in integrity. After training and I began my practices, I realized a lot of people were coming to me from, should I say, shonky shaman experiences. And it really alerted me to what they weren't doing to keep people safe, closing down to getting people back in their bodies after sessions. People need to be safe. Somebody once said to me, oh, but you know, in shamanism, you've got to take risk. And I said, yeah, but you can take risk and be safe. What I facilitate for people is to be safe in practice of whatever they do. Build up safety inside themselves. That's meant sanctuary, power animals, really getting a core strength inside so then you can go and deal with your abuse issues or get an animal to help you if you don't want to face it. I cover a lot of things. Mainly I want to help that person with a recipe that works for them in whatever pathway they go. Like, not everybody's into shamanism. Some people are a bit more witch orientated, other people have mixed religion. I facilitate the recipe of their own wellness, and sooner or later maybe they won't need me anymore, and that's my job, that I give them the tools. I'm very much about giving you the tools to help you work out your own balance so you won't need me anymore.
To complete the circuit with your help, but then to be able to take those tools and continue on their journey on their own.
Exactly, because I'm not a Freudian psychotherapist that says, oh, let's go through this, you know, for the rest of your life. It's like, well, let's see what's acute. Let's see what's blocking your way. I'm very good at wound tracking, getting to the bottom of the origin. I've done shamanic cellular therapy as well. I'm very big on tracking the core issues. And then the rest of the issues you have the tools to work with. And you can move through things much more easily.
Anyone who is about to embark on endurance training, they want to make sure they have the proper diet and they do the physical exercises so that they have the stamina to do the hike. And if their goal is to heal, there are certain principles that they need to learn in order to have the stamina to complete their journey.
Absolutely. And sort of like doing crystal healings or different forms of being there for people. But what they don't realize, if they don't check their own energy, if they don't understand their own energy, they may well leak the debris upon the person that they're trying to help. So it's about understanding your own vibration and how it works. So if you've got a lot of debris, of how to clear yourself first, like you mentioned to me before this interview, you went and did Qigong. It's sort of how you harmonize your energy before you step in and help somebody else.
And I suppose that would be why you'll speak to someone and they'll say they couldn't continue to go to their therapist because, as the one seeking treatment, were feeling depleted afterwards. And after a while, they sort of came to realize that their therapist was, as you say, leaking debris upon them.
Exactly. And that's where shamanism has got really good tools. The shamanic tools are to do with energy. They're to do with vibration. There's a tool called recapitulation. This is a very old shamanic tool. And it's how to clear yourself of other people's debris. And it's quick. It's easy. You can do it on the toilet. You can do it on the shower. You can do it in the car waiting for your kids to come out of school. This tool I often give to single mothers. They can do it while washing up the dishes, while the kid's grabbing onto their leg. I get a lot of single mothers who don't have a lot of time. Mm-hmm. All of us can retreat to a mountain and get a ritual and play our drum.
I think that's crucial. We can't live in a bubble, and in order to interact with other humans and in order to live our life in the way that we could potentially be living it, we need to have some of these tools in order to function.
Yes, and I think there's an enormous amount of fear going around. The beauty of the multidimensional landscape that you can access with shamanism is that somebody was saying the other day, oh, I can't travel anywhere anymore. And I say, yeah, but you can travel within. But there's amazing scenery if you connect and go deep enough. There's an incredible enrichment that you can build within while sort of we're waiting for the world to change. It's a great opportunity in a way to build your inner core.
It seems like everyone has their own interpersonal trial, and this is bringing it to the surface.
I think that's very true. I think, you know, people's fears, whatever their primary wound, may that be death, abandonment, poverty, they are all arising, and it's an opportunity to kind of walk inside and find ways to support ourselves from within.
You mentioned cellular therapy before. What is entailed in that?
The cellular therapy looks at DNA links. It looks at things you've carried in your cellular memory from, say, your ancestors, from conception, from birth. For a lot of people, they come in with debris. They don't know where this debris came from. For some, it can be other lives, but it also can be, I'll just use this as an example, in your family, everybody seems to have a temper, lots of anger for some reason, and it's just always been there. You have it too. You don't know what to do with it. You don't know how to control it. You don't know where it's come from. It's a learned thing, but your mother had it. Your mother said your grandmother had it. In cellular therapy, you can go right back to the first ancestor that held that charge, that experienced that anger, sort of like a domino effect. You can clear it from your ancestral DNA. When I was training, I found the ancestral line incredibly powerful. With shamanism, there's great respect for the ancestors and what we've learned from our ancestors. The healing of shamanism also includes clearing your ancestral debris, which I find quite enjoyable, actually, you know, because it's quick, it's clean. I remember my teacher saying to me, oh, are you okay to go further? I'm going, yeah, let's go for it, you know. And even though I felt pain, I knew I was releasing it, so it was all good. I'm just absolutely curious, and I think that's what keeps me going. The feeling on the other side when you come out is just, you know, you just feel so much lighter. I find the ancestral DNA work, it's self-evident in my daily life how things change because of it.
If we encounter a pain and we know that it's actually leading somewhere, that maybe the problem will diminish for us in the future, it's sort of like an investment.
It's like midwifery. When a woman's giving birth and there's a certain stage called transition and she's like, I don't really want to do this. Many women say, however long after, I don't even remember the pain. That's kind of how I feel about those situations. I don't remember the pain. I just remember the rewards.
You know, you get to keep the rewards through the rest of your life.
Exactly.
And then potentially the ripple effect from what you've done with your inner work affects on some level the people around you.
Yes, and that's where that evidence is. Like some people say, oh, it's all in your imagination. It's more in what you experience. If what you experience shifts your perspective, shifts your vibration, your relationships with other people, then there's the proof. And for me, it did change dynamics in relationships by doing certain things. I would go, oh, that charge with that person isn't there as strong, or they do that. And before, I used to sort of go, you know, and get really gnarly about it. Now it's, oh, I don't have that charge. That's the evidence.
Oh, so the fuse might get lit, but the dynamite's gone now.
Ah, beautifully said. Exactly. I enjoy the challenges that come because now I think, okay, I want to know on the analytical side, but then I have to switch my mind, you know, journey the shamanic side to see the other things I can't see with my ordinary eyes.
I'm very much the same way, and it's sort of a constant play going on between the two hemispheres of my brain. You know, well, this is what it's doing, yes, but what else is it doing?
Exactly, and I think that's the bridge. On one side of the bridge is ordinary reality. On the other side is non-ordinary reality, and that can access to the multi-dimensional landscape. For me, when I was younger, the bridge was one of those that you'd step on and bits would fall off. But now my bridge is a strong natural structure. So I can stand in the middle of the bridge, technically with one foot on one side and one foot on the other, and I'm stable. If I become unstable, I know how to secure the bridge.
You know, you build your home, and if you're a carpenter, you never really have to worry, because if something goes wrong, you can fix it.
Exactly.
So you mentioned tools. I wanted to ask, do you have spirit guides, or do you have animal guides that you interact with? Do you see images in that respect, or hear advice? How does that work for you?
So what I call my spirit animals. That's very shamanic. Having spirit animals is kind of part and parcel of your shamanic world. And I got them via journeying by the by the shamanic journey of going to meet them. It's a lot different than, oh, because I like a wolf, that must be mine. It's an actual journey to find them. And I call them in before I did this session. But as in guides, I kind of do a combination and a ritual before things just to call in my kin, as it were, my inner family. That includes the family that I've created in my spirit soul walk as a contemporary shaman. So they are my animal kin and they are my guides kin, my people who are of service to me. Usually before a session, I meditate and I basically ask spirit to help me get out of my own way so I can be of service. I put my mind upon the person who I'm having the session with, and spirit usually downloads a lot to me. I often get pictures and I get words and I get symbols. I hear not like an auditory hearing, I hear within. When I was walking through my dark night of the soul, I heard auditory voices, which were not pleasant. But now, because I have shifted from that, it's more like I hear them from my heart than my ears. And I hear the language comes out, like they'll show me a picture. They might have somebody in spirit that talks to me, but it's not auditory. And I just write everything down that they say. I relate back to the client to see if they relate to it. And often, I don't know what I'm writing. I don't know why I wrote it. Mm-hmm. And the client will go, how did you know that? I think in the beginning when I moved over to Skype sessions, I was thinking, how is this going to work? I was trying a little bit too hard because I wasn't used to doing Skype. And then I started coughing. And that was spirit basically telling me to shut up because they had a lot of information coming through and I was too busy talking. And I was like, okay, right, sorry. So I closed my eyes and I literally said, I'm moving over. And when I close my eyes, then the images fly through and the messages fly through. I kind of refer to it as my kin, and I say they're we, as in they speak, which sometimes they do through me. They come from a state of we, not I.
So it's sort of like a collective effort has come together.
Exactly. Yes.
Very much like universal consciousness, but refined for your channel.
Yes, that's a lovely way of saying it. Yeah, refined for my channel, and basically in the beginning I ask those that want to be of service come through that are connected to me. And then I don't get caught up in the idea of who's who or who's saying what, because that puts my mind into working. Then I go into the analytical place of, like, who's this talking? And it's like, no, get out the way. And that's a kind of joy in it when you relay these messages. When I relay, I close my eyes so I can tune in. When spirit says, you know, can you be quiet for a minute? And I open my eyes, I look at the person and I said, you know, how was that for you? Was that of service to you? And the person's usually gobsmacked. And it's just like, oh, this is great. You know, good. You know, I had no idea what it was, but yay, it resonates with you. Oh, I'm so happy. I quite like that. Sort of not being attached to the information to see how relevant it is for the other person.
I am trying to sort of get an angle on what shamanism actually means, but there's so many different levels. You're someone who draws up the energy of the ether to heal and to help perpetuate healing.
Yeah, I think shamanism is very much involved with a multidimensional landscape and how to travel it and how to negotiate with it. To me, it was the best travel guide I'd ever come across, that helps you be connected to the earth. Nature is such a healing energy. If you think about those who, and I don't particularly advocate this is not my path, but those who take something like ayahuasca, which is the South American vine, when they take ayahuasca in the proper circumstances, they see nature as a vibration in all its colours and the aura of nature. And I think that's what we are too, part of nature. So if we close our eyes and look at the world in this multidimensional frequency vibration, to me that is where shamanism really comes in. There are rules in shamanism, how you encounter, say, negative energy or what religious people would call a demon. There are rules in how you do that. Say somebody who is Christian-based would maybe come get a priest to exorcise the being, the demon, the spirit, whereas a shaman would first go in and see what is the relationship, how the person connected to that being in the first place, and to actually help the being, whereas the priest might say, for instance, go back from where you came. The being is lost. They don't know where they are. They don't know how to get out. Whereas the shaman helps the person and the being and sets the being free.
Oh.
So there are kind of ways in how you do things that are different.
Fascinating. So it's a more holistic approach, I suppose, to do it with shamanism, because you're looking at why the person attracted this particular circumstance issue in the first place. They've attracted it as a learning tool. It's not about trying to punish or expel the learning tool. It's about healing on both ends.
Exactly. And that to me is probably what appealed to me greatly, because I felt invaded by beings that were tormenting me. For me, the more I fought them, challenging, go away, it just got worse and worse. And I didn't know how to deal with them, and I wasn't very religious. I didn't know how to work it. Whereas at shamanism, it's very much about meeting those other beings and saying, hi, who are you? Where did you come from? How long have you been here? What are you doing here? You know, to sort of negotiate, because a lot of beings, you know, frustrated because we don't hear them, or we don't pay attention, or we say, oh, go away, I don't want to talk to you. Like somebody will say, I've got a ghost in the house. And I said, well, have you asked it anything about itself? It's like, oh, no, I don't want to talk to it. You know, it's like, well, talk to it. Let's find out why they're there. Pretty much every time, there's a reason why they're there. Shamanism has this great way of negotiating that other side, finding out why they're there and to help them go home. Look, if it's a benevolent being connected to a house, they might not want to go, and that's their free will. But there's a lot of beings that really are lost and have no idea that they're stuck and end up accumulating all sorts of debris from sort of very low-grade areas of the psyche, and they don't know where to go. The shaman also helps them.
In terms of ghosts and houses, a number of people I've talked with in the past, and they say they have a ghost in their house. And I like your comment about figuring out why this entity is drawn to you. If it's affiliated with your house, and let's say it's benevolent, but the fact that it always sounds like someone's stacking the dishes in your cabinet every night after everyone's gone to bed could be a little bit annoying. How would you suggest dealing with maybe not causing too much of a problem, but you just would like a little peace?
Maybe they were there before you, and maybe that was their house and you're the visitor.
Yeah.
You make yourself feel safe first. The parts of you that often don't feel safe when you're fearful are your back and your belly. Say, for instance, you put your back against the wall, back against the bedhead or something. Put your hands over your belly and your heart, or even put a teddy bear in front of you if you want. Put yourself into a physical position where you feel safe. From that position, and having lit a candle and calling your guides, spirit kin, whatever you like to call them, ask that being to come forward and say, hello, who are you? Why are you here? And if it's somebody like that stacking the dishes, say, look, I really appreciate you stacking the dishes, but it's keeping me awake at night. Could you do it kind of one out during the day, or negotiation with spirit? It's like dealing with a real person. And of course, you might get beings that are going to be not helpful, try to scare you. Then you kind of need a bit more skill then, and that's when you might come and see me. In my experience, being gentle opens a lot more doors than telling them to get lost. You get a lot further that way than you do putting up shields and putting yourself in a bubble where your fear sits in the bubble with you. It's really about being open to negotiation, keeping your heart open, and knowing that your guides, your spirit animals, have your back.
So there's an element of trust on your behalf as well, that when you've asked for support, that you'll receive it.
Exactly. That comes with those journeys that you've imprinted them into your soul. So it's not just an imaginary tiger. You've actually embodied it in the journey of working with your spirit animal, those characteristics of that tiger. So when your tiger does step up, you feel that presence really strongly. I've been very scared at times with things I've encountered. Pulses going, sweating, really, really terrified. But when I've called them in, it switches over and the terror drops completely. And I'm in that, my heart space saying, okay, hello, thanks for coming. What have you come to teach me?
Let's say for those of us who have not experienced shamanic training and who have periodic moments of clarity and insight, I have a reoccurring dream about a little red fox that comes out of the jungle and tells me things. It always, it is really lovely. It always offers this really insightful advice. The first time I saw it, I knew it was speaking Aramaic. I've looked it up in terms of what it could mean as a spirit animal. And good qualities. I mean, it's cunning and sneaky, but you know, that's all right too. It sort of gets you where you need to go, and I feel quite comforted knowing that I'm somehow connected to it.
Yeah. People expect the spirit animal to be this grand bear or tiger, but the smaller animals have great qualities. They can see things you can't see. You know, for instance, a fox, because of its qualities, is very clever, it's very cunning. It knows how to hide. It also knows how to pick up scents. So all those behaviours in that animal can be utilised when you need them. For, say, in soul retrieval, you know, they'll go to somewhere and the wound is too great and they won't want to go into that room where that memory was. They can't find where they fragmented in. So say, for instance, they might have a spirit animal. Those attributes that animal has can be put to use. So the fox can go into the room and the fox can sniff out something. The fox can work out that something's behind the wall that you can't see. Utilize the attributes of your spirit animal to help you in all sorts of ways. And it doesn't have to always be a grand being. Some of the smaller beings are wonderful and incredibly helpful to have around you. And by the way, the fox, because it comes into your dream that much and it's a consistent being that's visiting you, your dream world is non-ordinary reality. Your dream world is one of the landscapes of the multidimensional. If a fox is there giving you messages, all these wonderful wisdoms, even in Aramaic, you know, it is showing you that it is your spirit animal because it's consistent.
It's showing up over and over again for a reason.
Exactly. And those qualities are really good to use in your path of how you work. It's like calling the fox in for assistance.
Would your suggestion, when you realize that you are working with some sort of spirit animal, I don't know, maybe meditate with it, try to get to know it a bit better?
Yeah, and I would say the spirit animal journey is kind of like the key one to really get to know it in the best way. But if you cannot do that or you don't do that for whatever reason, I would say there's a book by Ted Andrews, Animals Speak. That's a really good example. It shows you the qualities of the animal, but both in spirit but both in behavior. And I would say learn your animal's behavior. Learn what it's good at, what its skills are. Does it see in the dark? What's clever about it? What can it outrun? What can it outsmart? What is its foe? What is the threat? What's the other animal threat to it? Because that's interesting as well, because that might happen in your life that you feel threatened by something. So it's good to know what you feel threatened by. But I think it's the behavior of the animal that is really helpful. I find it's enormously helpful. Like an owl can see in the dark. An eagle can see a mouse from high up in the sky, which means that it can zoom in on detail. Look at the attributes of your power animal or what you think your spirit animal is, because those are the keys to help you connect with it more. I have a lot of catkin, from cougars to panthers. They're independent and good at stealth in the dark, which I tend to be myself, quite stealthy in the dark investigation of people's wounds. That's the most popular topic.
Oh, is it?
I would say that on my Facebook page, whenever I do an animal medicine post, yeah, right, everybody wants to talk about animals.
Well, they're such wonderful healers.
I think animals have the benefit of not having an analytical mind like we do that can get in the way. The beautiful thing about shamanism is you've got a whole wildlife in there. There are animals from all different parts of the world. There's just an abundance of different beings that can come through at different times. Some animals are with us since we were born, and some animals come at different circumstances for different things we do. Different animals that you didn't know about can step up and help you. Yeah, it's a big subject, most enjoyable, wonderful connection from within as well.
And speaking of earth energies, if we think about our body systems, we are energy. Even our solid mass isn't really solid. What can you say to people who are wondering how to work with their own energetic circulation to provide healing?
I can only speak from my own experience, because only through experience do you understand something. My body, I refer to it as my earth suit. my soul lives inside my earth suit. My earth suit reacts to different things, depending on what I'm doing, depending on the level of workload. My body can be affected. And I think one of the things right now that's affecting a lot of people's bodies is that our immunity is being challenged. There are ways that we can strengthen our immunity in an energetic way. Spending time in nature, because nature doesn't ask anything of us. You're in an apartment and you can't get out. There are many wonderful YouTubes right now of nature. If you can't get to nature, you can imbibe nature through your eyes and through your senses. And I think the connection with nature is really helpful. Energetically, if I don't get out and walk amongst some trees, I can feel my vibration get a bit low. The other thing you can do is flower essences. Flower essence, it shifts your vibration from this density into a lighter vibration. Connecting with nature in whatever way you can, pruning a pot plant, listening to nature sleep videos can improve your energetic system and your energetic immunity. Vibrational medicine is very gentle. Kids can take it. If you don't have rescue remedy, then I would recommend you go and get it, because that also helps your energetic vibration. When I talk about it with kids, I call it fairy juice. If you don't like the alcohol, take the mother essences, break it down in a bit of water, and you get some vegetable glycerin, which tastes amazingly good, and children just think it's delicious. On a body energetic level, nature, flower essences, soothing music, good doses of vitamin C powder, proper B6 and B12, which helps your mind and helps your nervous system function better. Because our nervous system is really affected by stress. If we can nourish our nervous system and take our vibrations to a better level, then our immunity is stronger. In the shamanic world, playing a drum also shifts your vibration. Doing inner journey work, anything that lifts your vibration is good for your body's energetics. What I have in my hand right now is a rock from the base of the Grand Canyon. This rock is my grounding rock. I would recommend people hold on to something to ground their energy, and I would recommend that they choose not like a high frequency rock like a rose quartz or an amethyst, something denser, a real earthy rock, if you can get a hold of one.
Perhaps something like hematite or onyx?
Yep, anything that's brown, dark, red, earth colours, more sort of rock than crystal. If you don't have a rock around, then put a heavy blanket on your feet to help ground your body somewhat. What you're looking for is to feel connected. Shamanism is about connecting to the multidimensional worlds.
It's been wonderful sitting with Odette in such a warm, comfortable setting, listening to the winds howl madly at the windows. But it's getting late, and Odette and I are going to turn within. In episode 5, she's promised to discuss the ways in which she uses mediumship as a therapeutic tool, how to follow our body messages and work with our instinctive guidance. Also, I'm being given some questions from listeners who are looking for a bit of shamanic insight. See you then. You're listening to Nature, Therapy, and Beyond with Catherine Sky Knott. Appreciation to our guest, contemporary shaman and author Odette Nightsky. Gratitude to Blue Dot Sessions, www.sessions.blue, for our instrumentals. And to you, thank you for listening.